Welcome to The Climate Fix. My name is Asim. On this show, we shine a spotlight on nonprofits, academics, corporations, startups, anyone working on a solution to the climate problem.
The three methodologies that we have at the moment are biochar, wooden building elements, and carbonated building elements. So biochar, it's actually, it comes from biomass. It looks like, black pellets, a little bit like charcoal. It comes from processing the biomass in very high temperatures without any oxygen. It's a process called pyrolysis.
I see.
And what is really interesting about biochar is that it has a lot of commercial uses. So it's used as a fertilizer. It makes the soil retain more water. So it's really good for regenerative agriculture. And then it is also used in water filtering applications.
That was Elba Horta from Puro Earth. We've covered a number of other carbon removal startups in this podcast. Episode one was Paul Gamble from Nori, who are more focused on soil sequestration. And episode five was Elliot Coed from Offset Earth, now renamed Ecology, who are more focused on tree planting. Puro Earth is different. They don't focus on natural solutions, but on industrial carbon removal. Their removal offsets are based on the carbon absorbed and retained for at least 50 years in wooden building elements, for thousands of years in biochar, and permanently in carbonated building elements. These are areas I've not covered previously, so I was very interested in this conversation with Elba. Elba is the business development manager at Puro Earth. She has worked for 20 years for both startups and global corporations in technology, finance, and business development roles, including 5 years in Silicon Valley. She has a bachelor's in geosciences from Penn State University and an MBA from California State University in Los Angeles. Let's dive in. Hi, Elba. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Asim. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. What is the climate problem that you are solving?
The climate problem we're solving is that there is too much CO2 in the atmosphere. So there's very high concentrations of CO2, and we need to keep them down. We need to reduce our emissions and also remove some of that CO2.
We absolutely do need to do that.
So it's really worth it to do this, as you know, to try to keep the temperature from reaching, such big dramatic changes, and to keep the changes under 1.5 or 2 degrees and reach those climate goals. We definitely need to remove.
Awesome. And I think that's kind of why it's worth solving that kind of problem. It's kind of the biggest problem we have in sustainability right now. It's because our biggest nut to crack. And how do you propose to solve this? Like, what is the solution?
So at Puro Earth, what we are doing is what we call a carbon transformation marketplace. So we are the world's first B2B carbon removal marketplace. And what this means is that we are connecting companies who, in their product or in their process, remove carbon from the atmosphere with companies who want to be sustainable companies, who want to go carbon neutral or carbon net zero. And so we are connecting these two kinds of companies. And essentially, we are doing this in three steps. First, we are identifying those companies that have a carbon removal method. Then we are verifying with a third party those carbon removals or negative emissions. So how much carbon are they sequestering from the atmosphere in that product or in that process? And then we are issuing carbon removal certificates. We call them CORCs. And then these certificates are bought by the other companies who are the ones who want to become, more sustainable, who want to neutralize their CO2 emissions. And these carbon, this we are calling them carbon transformers because we want to inspire them. And I think that that name is really great for them. So the companies who are removing carbon are transforming carbon. You know, they are stabilizing it and they're storing it in a durable storage. And then the corporations or organizations who are buying the CO2 removal certificates, they are also transforming carbon. And, you know, so this carbon transformation model is a business model to scale carbon removal, which we really need to do. Right now, the carbon removal industry is very nascent, it's at its early stage. There are, you know, very few projects or, you know, companies out there who are doing it and who are who have, let's say, a support to verify the net negativity of their products and to have a platform where to sell the climate service that they are offering, which I think is very valuable.
Do you mind me? So it sounds like you're providing both verification of carbon removals and you're selling certificates. Can you mind? Did you say quarks?
Yes. So quarks would be CO2 removal certificate. That's what it stands for.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
So it's equivalent to 1 ton of CO2 that has been removed or, you know, has been sequestered in a product, in a durable storage. And at the moment, these quarks are issued for 3 different methodologies. At Puro Earth, we have the methodology of biochar, and I will explain them one by one. Then the other one is wooden building elements, and the third one is carbonated building elements. These are 3 methods that we have identified as technologies that are already available and already mature enough to, you know, not only do they have a commercial value, therefore, as products themselves, they will sell, they will have a market for them. But then their climate service also will have a market for them because they are carbon net negative. And carbon net negative means that product has in their whole, you know, manufacturing process has sequestered more CO2 than it has emitted in that whole process of production or manufacturing. Therefore, we know that there is a removal there. So it is a valid carbon removal. And so the verification of the quarks happens by a third party. Right now, we are using a company called DNVGL, and they are actually the biggest assurance business assurance company in the world. They do ISO standard certification, and so they are the ones verifying that what these carbon removal suppliers are claiming, which is that they are sequestering CO2 in their products, that it is true. And it's actually done in a very science-based, you know, standard scientific equipment measurement of, you know, how much CO2 is in these products.
How would this be different to, and this is just to help understand where Puro Earth kind of fits in into the ecosystem of sustainable solutions out there. But where does this fit in? How do you see yourselves as different to perhaps a standardization body or something like the gold standard or, is it VCS, the other kind of standardized? How do you see yourself as different from that?
Yeah, so we have created our own standard, which would be this quark, the CO2 removal certificate. However, it is based on the greenhouse gas protocol. So we have taken a standard and then sort of used that to make our own. And what it means is, it also meant that we could do this quickly, right? We started about 18 months ago, and there was a period of time, which was really quite short, where we looked at these methodologies. We looked at many methodologies And then we decided that these three were ready. You know, they, like I said, they are mature, they are commercially available, and they could scale at industrial level. They also could be verifiable, so they were science-based. And the carbon removal methods then, for us, it was quite important that they would be credible, of course, because our customers would be these corporations who want to buy carbon removals. And of course, for them, it's quite important that this is very, you know, verified and science-based. We did not want to work with other standards because actually there were no other standards of carbon removal in industrial methods like these. So we just had to go ahead and create it.
Oh, I see. So the gold standard and these other methods, they don't have the kind of rigorous methods that you're looking for, the verifiable methods you're looking for, which you can actually get if you narrow down the focus into biochar, wooden building. I love wooden buildings because we had another podcast episode a little bit ago with Rhizome, and they're talking about using engineered bamboo for buildings. That was my first look at...
That was a great podcast, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That was a very interesting, fascinating podcast. Yeah. So I see what you're saying. So it's kind of you're narrowing down on a few areas that are verifiable, which I think I realize that, yeah, I see that. That's verifiable. That's easy to verify. And also, you mentioned that you're based on the greenhouse gas protocol. So are you even breaking them down to scope 1, 2, and 3? Like, do I know?
No, no, that would be on, you know, the company would have to decide whether this is going to neutralize scope 1, 2, or 3 of their emissions. They would then buy cork to match or neutralize those emissions that they would want to neutralize.
I think I just exposed my complete lack of understanding of the GHD protocol.
But what I was going to say is that, of course, now that carbon removals are becoming a hot topic in sustainability, of course, we're trying to be part of all of the new guidance that is coming out in carbon removals. So we are definitely trying to, partnering, and we are being very present, and we want to give our experience, our learnings with what we have done. You know, we started selling cork 1 year ago in May of 2019. And so we had the hypothesis that there was a market out there for carbon removals, science-based and verified, and that there were corporations who wanted to start using them already. And we have proven that. Actually, one of our first customers was Swiss Re, which is one of the biggest insurance companies in the world. And they had been, from 2003, a company who had, reached carbon neutrality using traditional carbon offsets. And then in the last years, they have been moving towards removing. So they have a slogan that says, we do our best and remove the rest. And this do our best, of course, is a series of reductions within their operations. But then later they are going to then remove whatever residual emissions they have. And so we know that they're like Swiss Re, there, many companies were looking for the right carbon removals. Many of them, of course, would probably want to look for them in their own value chains or in their own, interest in their industry. And we think that with these methods, for example, for sure, the construction industry, of course, any kind of technology, financial, insurance companies. This is important. What I thought it was really interesting, one of the reasons why Swiss Re has been getting involved with carbon removals has been because they see it also as something for their customers. You know, as an insurance and reinsurance company, they want to tell their customers what are the risks out there. And they climate change is a big risk. So then, of course, going into the climate solutions is quite important for these companies.
I'd love to dig a little bit more into, you mentioned kind of biochar, and even just explain those concepts a little bit, like biochar. Is it biochar or biocar?
Biochar.
Biochar. And the other two as well, yeah.
Great, yeah. So the three methodologies that we have at the moment are biochar, wooden building elements, and carbonated building elements. So biochar, it's actually, it comes from biomass. It looks like, black pellets, a little bit like charcoal. It comes from processing the biomass in very high temperatures without any oxygen. It's a process called pyrolysis. The chemical process, I have to say that I don't know exactly how it happens. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is because I went to an audit the other day to our biochar supplier. And it was so interesting to see the furnace where this happens. And then I was there all day with the auditor, seeing, all the laboratory claims and the results of what this biochar has absorbed. And then the extra CO2 that has been absorbed, that's what are issued CO2 removal certificates.
Ah, I see.
And what is really interesting about biochar is that it has a lot of commercial uses. So not only is it having this climate service, but then it is used, for example, it can be mixed with soil to, so it's used as a fertilizer. It makes the soil retain more water. So it's really good for regenerative agriculture. And then it is also used in water filtering applications, so in landscaping. And what this means is that, biochar producers could be funded by the CO2 removal certificates to grow their operations.
And that's interesting. So before you, these companies were functioning as normal economic entities. They're selling biochar,
yes,
already profitable to these industries, as a carbon removal would be an extra source of income for them.
Yes, it would be an extra income stream, which means that they could grow their operations. So for example, one of our suppliers has bought new equipment, which means that they can now create or manufacture more biochar. And so that means that they are removing more CO2 from the atmosphere. Because what is really important here is that the biochar will remain in the soil for hundreds and up to thousands of years. So it doesn't degrade. It's a very stable form of carbon. And this is the kind of technologies that we were looking for. Not only do they have the carbon sequestration, but it's durable. We know that the CO2 is going to be stored and it doesn't go back into circulation.
This is what you verified, because you said at the start you're net negative and you figured out end to end.
Yes, from cradle to gate. So we know that the whole manufacturing is absorbing more CO2 than it is emitting.
Amazing, yeah. So using in regen, and I know I use things like vermiculite. I've been going into gardening myself. I use things like vermiculite, which is kind of like a material that helps absorb water, and it's kind of really good in soil and helps with drainage. And that sounds like sort of biochar. Now I want to go find some biochar to put in my garden.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to try some biochar, yeah. That's amazing. And so, yeah, so the uses are, I heard from you, they're predominantly agriculture, it sounded like.
Yes, and water filtering.
And water is another big problem in the world as well, yeah.
Exactly. For example, stormwater runoff, so that there's no eutrophication of lakes, for example. So it's been used like that as well. And of course, these industries could be innovating, could be more ideas on how to use them could happen, could be developing, but they need to grow more. You know, they need to become, they need to disrupt those industries with, you know, in this case, it would be the agricultural industry, so that there can be more of them and more use of this biochar, for example.
So to me, it sounds like by giving them an additional income stream, you're making them more profitable,
mm-hmm.
which may encourage people to create more of these businesses in the first place and have the industry grow.
Yes.
But is it also going to reduce the cost of the end product as well? Because I imagine that's going to help to...
Yes, that's one thing they can use, of course, the funds is to lower the prices for the product and they become more competitive.
What is the competitors to biochar at the moment?
Well, all kinds of fertilizers. So, and they could be, you know, non-organic fertilizers, I guess. And what I was going to say, you know, these industries, we will go a little bit more into the building elements industry. But these industries are also kind of transition industries. You know, we're trying to move away from fossil fuels. We need new jobs in other areas. So they are also helping in terms of a green recovery and in creating green jobs. So, you know, do we want to grow that? Yes, I think so. We want to grow, you know, things that are carbon net negative. We want, you know, innovations in these industries. So why not? You know, when a company buys CO2 removal certificates from these operations, they are helping them grow and, you know, have that industrial scaling, which is what we are looking for. You know, by 2050, we should have net zero of emissions. The only way to get there is through many different kinds of solutions. And removal is a very important part. And so we need to scale all of these, what are essentially factories. So, you know, it's infrastructure that needs to grow. It's their value chain that needs to grow, you know, from harvesting, distributing, you know, all their supply chain logistics. So that's a lot of jobs that could be created. And so I really think that, you know, our vision from the beginning has been to have a climate impact and also an economic impact.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is why we are choosing these operations that are mature enough and also have commercial value so that, you know, they could take off.
Yeah, I see. And I love the fact that they could function without you and they are profitable without you. So you're helping the fire grow.
Yeah, well, actually, many of them don't have the funds. Okay, you know, that's the thing. They are still quite minimal compared to, you know, for example, let's look at wooden building elements. If you look at the cement industry, you know, that is massive. So if you could disrupt that industry with carbonated building elements, which are absorbing CO2 and not using cement. So instead, CO2 is being, you know, absorbed into the concrete. Then imagine the impact would be huge.
So if you could just describe a little bit, is it like a cement that sucks carbon? Like what is it?
Yeah, so these carbonated building elements are essentially CO2 concrete. So it is concrete that instead of using cement, it's using CO2, which actually hardens it. It's using steel slag, so it's a waste byproduct from the steel industry. And what happens is that when it's being cured, it is absorbing CO2. And so it is, at the molecular level, it is hardened into the stone, you know, so it will become pretty much concrete stone. And it can be used in pavements or walls. So imagine if you could introduce this kind of building elements and substitute normal building elements that use cement. So, and like I said, these commercial operations are just very early stage. And so they do need investment. one of our suppliers, for example, is using looking for investors, the revenue of corks is important there because they know that that will be a separate revenue stream from them. And so that's the idea, that we are helping these operations to grow with this extra push, this extra revenue.
I would love just to go back for a second into the carbonated. I'm trying to like imagine what it's like and trying to paint a picture in my head.
Yeah.
Is it like cement? Like, is it like something, is it something you can just mix with some water and sand and then it just sucks carbon from the atmosphere? Or is it something that's pre-made on another site and you get shipped to stone, which has had all the carbon sucked into it?
Yeah, so there's two ways of doing it, exactly like those two options that you just talked about. So one of them is to actually mix it, and the other one is to create stones. So, for example, you would create, pavement stones.
Or like the bricks for your house, or...
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
So the bricks for your house could be a net negative.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be absolutely... Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. And how many of these companies are there out there in the world? Like, how many people are making carbonated?
There's not a lot. One of the other methodology we haven't talked about is wooden building elements. And there's probably, of course, a lot more of those. But carbonated building elements, that is an industry that is just, starting. But there's a few. And biochar is actually kind of old technology. We have had it for a while. So that could also grow quite easily. Maybe this is a time when I can talk a little bit about the wooden building elements, because they are also quite interesting. Of course, we've had always wooden buildings, and we know that trees capture CO2, but, we don't know what is going to happen, for example, to a forest. Is it going to burn down? Is there going to be a hurricane and the forest is going to fall off? So what we are looking for in these methodologies is the point in their value chain, what we call the point of no return, the point in their value chain where it makes no sense to destroy the tree anymore or to destroy the carbon storage anymore. So, and for trees, that happens when the tree has been cut into a timber, into a customized building element. So then we know, it would make no sense to burn this now, because this can go into a building, and it creates an economic incentive to keep it and to lock that CO2 there. So we have done that in all the methodologies, but for wooden building elements, that's quite important. So we then look at the whole manufacturing of those building elements, and whether even, from cradle to gate in that manufacturing, more CO2 has been absorbed than emitted. And again, then they get issued CO2 removal certificates based only on the extra CO2 that has been sequestered.
I never thought of it in that perspective, but yeah, as soon as you add enough value to the timber to make it not worth burning.
Yes.
And if you turn it into like boards, like as soon as you turn it into like a usable thing to build things with, I imagine that's adding a point of value as well. It's just a great way of looking at it. I've never really looked at it from that angle before. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I presume this only really makes sense if you're using kind of from some sustainable forestry. Yeah.
So our suppliers they have to abide by sustainable forestry principles, like the Forest Stewardship Council. So we make sure that this is actually sustainably harvested wood. that's definitely very important. And we also know that that's very important to the corporations who are buying the cork. So yeah, from the very beginning, that has been part of this. And, you know, we also have other suppliers. So it doesn't have to be just wood. It can be any biomass that has absorbed CO2. We have, for example, a supplier that makes insulation for buildings based on old newspapers.
Oh.
And so, again, this is biomass waste that has absorbed CO2. And now we need to transform it in a way that will be captured for at least 50 years into a building. So in by EU law, a building has to stand for at least 50 years. So the planning of the construction has to be enough that this will last 50 years. So our building elements then have that guarantee that, you know, the CO2 will be sequestered for at least 50 years.
Would they burn the insulation and the timber materials after 50 years?
No. It's just biomass waste that would have been burned probably, or would have been used in energy or somewhere else. But instead, it is processed to create insulation material. And this insulation material is then put into the building.
Gotcha.
You can go to our website and look at these. If you go to puro.earth, you can see our carbon removal methods and then the specific suppliers. And each of them has their story. What do they do? How do they capture CO2? What are the co-benefits of what they do? And of course, then you can also see how much CO2 per ton has been sequestered.
Yeah. I love the idea of these co-benefits as well, because the lack of insulation on buildings is also one of the biggest.
Energy waste.
Yeah. Energy waste in the world. That's amazing. So I think I've got a picture in my head of what Puro Earth does. So you've worked with a number of these suppliers. You've created a certificate called Cork, and you absolutely certify that, or the amount of tonnage of carbon each of these certificates, you know, you guarantee that that's there. And you only focus on these three.
Yes, but we are, at the moment, we are working on two new methodologies. So that's going to happen hopefully soon in the next few months. But the two methodologies are BECCS, which is bioenergy and carbon capture and storage, and soil carbon.
Soil sequestration.
Yes, sequestering in soil.
Yes. We covered some of that in a previous podcast episode with Nori. It was a surprise. I didn't realize that the amount of carbon that was sequestered in soil, and also the other discovery I had was it's actually in the organisms.
Yes.
And in the things that live in the soil, which is why practices like tilling and kind of turning over the soil, which I grew up with, just assuming that was just how you did it.
Yeah.
So you till the soil, but actually that destroys and releases the carbon. What we do in our garden at home is we practice kind of no-dig gardening. So we never dig. We only layer soil on top and compost on top. So that's kind of one of the things that I learned from there. But what's BECCS? So if you're okay to talk about it, can you describe BECCS to me? This is all fascinating stuff.
Yes, so it's using biomass for energy and then capturing the CO2 that might be released there.
Is that burning biomass as an energy source and then kind of...
And then, making sure that then the CO2 that is released there is actually captured.
Oh, I see.
And then used somewhere or hopefully used in... negative, for example, into another loop using that CO2 into something else or burying it.
And so these will be companies that will then basically be probably selling energy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll be able to provide them, as long as they can prove that the CO2 is not just released into the atmosphere, but
it's being captured and stored.
And then they can have an extra income stream, which is the carbon removal aspect of their business. Oh, I see the virtuous circle that you're providing here for all these organizations.
You know, one of the things that sometimes people misunderstand about Puro is, that the carbon removal or the technologies of carbon removal are all very, machines sucking CO2 from the air, this kind of thing. But we are focusing more on existing technologies and technologies that can become, you know, industrially scalable. And they don't have to be too futuristic, you know, or too in the future. Of course, I know that there are great companies who are doing these kind of things, and they are needed because any solution is needed at the moment. But we already have a lot of technologies out there like these that we have talked about. So the idea is that we can grow those. You know, instead of just, you know, looking into very futuristic technologies, let's scale the existing one.
I love that you said that. That's something I say as well. It's kind of weird. People sometimes feel that we're waiting for a solution to come along. And I hear what you're saying. We do need to create certain solutions for the longer term. But we have things right now that we can scale. And yeah, that's great. Great that you're working on that. If you don't mind, let me talk a little bit about Puro Earth itself as an organization, as a company. You said you started May last year. Like, what stage are you at as a company?
Well, I mean, we started earlier than that, so about 18 months ago. And it started really not only us, but about 22 companies more. So we're more of an initiative of a coalition of companies who were interested in developing carbon removal, and this, you know, we created a committee of, you know, many advisors from different companies and from six different countries, and so out of that came then the work about the methodology, so deciding, studying what were the carbon removal methods out there, and what was going to then be the cork. Right. How did we verify it also, and how to audit and how to then issue this CO2 removal certificate? So it wasn't just, you know, a couple of people, but it was actually a big cooperation between a lot of companies.
And these were companies that were interested in purchasing or sequestering carbon in some way. That's what they were interested in. And they said, let's get together, figure out how best to do it. Obviously, there's limitations in the existing methods.
Yes.
So it sounds like you started off with a customer base.
Yes, of course, some of them became customers. And we also then acquired, you know, customers that were not at all part of that first coalition. We actually started with auctions. So we had auctions where companies would come in and say, you know, they would ask for a volume of porks and put a price on the porks, and then the suppliers would, you know, either accept that bid or not. And we did this for six auctions. And they were very successful in the sense that they validated our hypothesis. You know, there are companies out there who want to go carbon neutral, carbon net zero, who will buy carbon removals from carbon removal suppliers. And so that was validated. And now we have other ways of buying. Auctions can happen, but at the moment we don't have any auctions planned. We now are focusing on online shopping. So, in other words, the companies can just come to our website, puro.earth, and get them from there. There is also the possibility to do pre-purchase agreements directly with the suppliers. So, if you want a specific type of carbon removal, you can negotiate with them. Also, because you want to make sure that they have the supply for you.
Mm.
Maybe because you have, you know, many thousands of tons of emissions that you want to neutralize. And so you can help that company grow their supply with your promise that you are going to buy the CO2 removal certificate from them.
Yeah, long-term contracts like that really help when you want to get financing from banks and,
exactly.
and things like
it's
that.
It's really important for financing for these suppliers when they have a pre-purchase agreement like that. And then at the moment, we have an awareness campaign. We have a website called carbontransformation.com. So if you go to carbontransformation.com, you can see a lot of information on, you know, what are the technologies that are out there, even some that we don't have yet at Puro Earth, but that we know that are up and coming, and that will have a climate impact. You can see what is going to be the climate impact of scaling them. You have information about who are the corporates out there, because there's a lot of corporations that are really, really leading this, right? I mean, Microsoft is one of them that are leading this in terms of putting funds so that carbon removals will grow. And there are other companies. You can also get information about which other companies are doing that there. And you have information from the different organizations, research organizations. What do they say about carbon removals? And there is a petition. So you can sign this petition. And it's just an awareness petition. You know, we want the media to take this topic of carbon transformation, or this topic of, you know, let's scale carbon removals. Let's finally, you know, put our money where our mouth is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we say we want a green recovery. Let's put, you know, the resources to what we say we want. Let's sustain that. And so you can sign the petition and share it. Share it with your colleagues. Share it with people that have to do with sustainability in your company. You know, share it in your social media. And then Puro Earth, we will donate 1,000 tons of carbon removal, so 1,000 corks, when we reach 1,000 signatures.
Oh, wow.
So carbontransformation.com.
I'll definitely put that in the show notes for people to click on when they listen to this episode. So if you don't mind, like, how does it scale? And that's one of the questions we're all really interested in is, as you said before, like, some of these industries right now and some of these sectors are quite small compared to the incumbents that are kind of very carbon intensive solutions. Like, how does Puro Earth scale? Imagine a future where you've reached your maximum potential. Who are your customers? Who are your suppliers? Like, how do you work? How did you get there? What does that look like?
Our suppliers, of course, both supply and demand has to scale. At the moment, we know that there are facilities out there that are ready to grow and they need a revenue. That's why things like pre-purchase agreements would be really important for them. Then we know from research that if we scale these methodologies, we can reach up to 15 gigatons of removals per year. So this is talking about, you know, scaling timber construction, carbon net negative timber construction, biochar, CO2 concrete, BECCS, soil carbon, enhanced weathering. So all of these technologies that, you know, are out there and available. So we need to scale them.
I'm not aware of what 15 gigatons is in terms of the overall impact. Do you have like comparison numbers?
Yes. For example, every year we are emitting about 40 gigatons of emissions.
Wow.
And the planet itself can take about half of that. So this is where the imbalance is, right? So the oceans can take that, you know, the forests, the soil, but this is the reason why the concentration keeps going up, because we are emitting more than the planet itself can recirculate.
So 15 gigatons sounds really amazing. It sounds like you believe you can take a really big chunk, or the majority of the chunk, out of the carbon emissions if this was to scale to the maximum.
Yes.
Very exciting.
That means scaling a lot of facilities. That means scaling, you know, a lot of these different methods. But, you know, we just have to start. You know, if we were if we were in 2050 and looking back, you know, to our younger selves in 2020, you know, we would probably be telling ourselves, you know, just start doing something. It will be needed. And once you start, you know, you can trigger change. You can inspire others to start doing as well. And I think most important, capital flows, you know, where money goes, change goes. And this is quite important, I think. You know, we as human beings, we know how to do industry. We know how to grow projects. We know how to make big things. So that's not the problem. You know, we have the mind. We now need the will.
That sounds great. I think I'm going to start asking that question to my guests. If you were in 2015 looking back to the past, what would you say to yourself? I'm not sure what I'd say to myself. That's a great answer. And I love the impact of. There's not many industries out there, there's not many solutions which could even potentially, I know it's a challenge, but could even potentially scale to that level. So it's really exciting that this is one of them. If you don't like mind me asking, like you mentioned kind of these other two technologies, bears and soil sequestration, like what do you see coming in the next 18 months for Puro Earth?
In the next 18 months, we have 96 suppliers in our pipeline, which means these are carbon removal operations that have actually found us and that have applied in our website to become a supplier of carbon removal. What happens is that, of course, they need to go through a process of verification. So they have to claim, first of all, they have to pay for an LCA, and that is something that they do themselves, which is a life cycle assessment. Then when we get that evidence from their independent LCA assurance company that has done that for them, when we get that evidence, then we see, okay, yes, this operation from cradle to gate is carbon net negative. So now we need to verify that that is actually correct. And that's where we then bring in the DNV auditors. Each facility actually gets a visit by an auditor. And also each product, so if whatever it is, the wooden building element, carbonated biochar, samples of it go to a lab and we look at the CO2 content. And so then, you know, this process sometimes takes a few weeks or sometimes it takes a few months. So this is a challenge, of course, to scale it in that sense. The different methodologies will have a slightly different verification process. And then, of course, there is the demand side. So we need to have that demand. You know, if you look at any other technology, so let's take renewable energies like solar energy. The good news is that these technologies are there and actually were there for decades. But the bad news is that it usually takes like 50 years to reach a tipping point when there is a new solution. Because first, you know, it's unfamiliar, then it's just in the fringe. Then come the early adopters, then mainstream adoption, you know, then you have economies of scale, by which time decades have passed. So what we're trying to do is to accelerate this growth of carbon removal. If the demand has to be there in order to accelerate, right? The companies like, you know, Microsoft and all these companies who are doing the climate pledge, you hear so many climate pledges in the news, all of them need to start putting their money where their mouth is. They need to start really funding carbon removal. And then we will be able to accelerate this process and accelerate the whole industry.
Brilliant. love it. Yeah, definitely. Everybody needs to put their money where their mouth is. And if you work for one of these companies and you hear your company is making an announcement, you know, I always say, like, hold your management to account.
Yeah.
You know, like, ask those questions, ask those tough questions in your all hands. Look at your corporate social responsibility pages and,
yeah,
you know, see what your companies are saying. And then, you know, you just challenge them. And maybe one of the solutions is to speak to Pura Earth. So if you don't mind, I'd love to kind of move on to a little bit to you, if possible.
Okay.
So you are the business development manager. What's your title at Pura Earth?
Yes, business development manager. I also do a lot of content marketing. You know, I try to talk to everyone about Pura Earth,
mm-hmm.
and try to develop partnerships. Yeah, and you know, my background, actually, I have a bachelor's degree in geosciences. I went to Penn State University, and you know, when I graduated from Penn State, I was thinking, well, I really like this whole environmental sciences thing, but I don't think I can find a good job there. You know, that's what I told myself, because it was also not seen as something that, oh, you know, that it's economically ahead, or, you know. And what we are seeing now, of course, years later, is that it's just the opposite, you know. If we cannot create business, if, you know, if we don't do it sustainably, environmentally and socially sustainably. So actually, if I look at myself back when I was, you know, 21 or 22 when I graduated, I was like, you know, you were wrong, you know. But what was good, you know, at that time, actually, I moved to Silicon Valley because I was working for the U.S. Geological Survey. And in Silicon Valley, I got, you know, swept away by all the energy that is there, by, you know, by the fast-paced, you know, technology and business scene there. And then I worked there for many startups. Then I did my master's in an MBA. And then I moved to Finland, actually. So I lived in California for many years, and then about 10 years ago, I moved to Finland. And I'm working, you know, again, working in between business and technology, always doing sales, marketing, technology, business development. And last year, something happened which kind of pushed me back to, you know what, you're now going to use these talents towards the environment, because it was really calling me. Last year, I don't know if you know who Polly Higgins is. She was called the lawyer of the earth, and she tried to get in the United Nations as a law, the law of ecocide, which would make ecocide, like, really big scale destruction of ecosystems, to be an international crime. And she was very inspiring to me. And, well, last year for Easter, she died. And she was only 50 years old. And I had watched all her TEDx talks, and, you know, she was very inspiring to me. And when that happened, I was like, oh my God, I, you know, we don't have time. We need to start, like, doing what we can, you know, according to what we know, according to where we are, according to our talent. So that was, I think, my big push. And at that time, I was working for a sustainability company. And then I found out about Pura Earth, and I thought, wow, what they are doing is so inspiring. I want to work for them. And this is where I am today.
Brilliant. Being in the space and doing what you do, I think it gives me a lot of purpose.
Yes.
Kind of gives you the thing that I never really had when I was working in more in the, just in the not in the sustainable space. But I think that has a danger of kind of hitting my next question, which I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, sometimes like what we do is hard. I think it's always a challenge. We're always fighting an uphill battle. We've always got this thing looming above our heads that the actual thing we're trying to fight for is so big. And sometimes it can be very challenging. How do you stay motivated through all the downsides, especially with a startup as well? Like, how do you stay motivated?
The long-term vision. I think that that's definitely what motivates me. At Puro Earth, we have the mission of, you know, mobilizing the economy for climate impact. So that vision is definitely what motivates me. Let's say something that inspires me is that, yeah, you mentioned that we are a startup, you know, we're small, we're starting small, even though we have, you know, a lot of partners. But, you know, a few days ago, I watched this little cartoon, something that had to do with, from my son's or school or something. And in the cartoon, there was a little hummingbird, really tiny, you know, bird. And there was a big forest fire. And he was very brave. And he was going to the river and taking this little drop of water to the forest fire. And all the big animals were like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Well, I'm doing what I can. I'm small, but this is what I can." And then the big animals joined him, you know, the bears and the antelopes. And that's what I'm hoping will happen with Puro Earth. That, you know, okay, we're starting small, but we have already seen, you know, bigger companies that are joining us. And I am hoping that, you know, more and more will come together, and this will become, you know, a huge success, and we will put down the forest fire.
That is incredibly motivational. I love that story. I think I'll use it myself when speaking to others. That's beautiful. So last question, Elba, is there anything kind of inspirational, something you've read recently, a person our listeners should follow, or even just a thought you had, something you want to leave the listeners with before we go?
I think my main thought is that we can all do something. So don't think that you don't have, you know, power. We all have power just by being here. So that's it. That's my thought. Just think of yourself as someone who can contribute.
Absolutely. I can't agree more. That's a wonderful statement. Well, thank you very much, Elba, for your time here today. And also thank you very, very much for everything that you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This was a really great experience. Thank you for your work. I really admire what you're doing. Thank you.
You've been listening to Asim Hussain on The Climate Fix. If you like what you heard, please hit subscribe on your favorite podcast application. It really does help. Information about this episode, including all the links that we mentioned, can be found on our website, theclimatefix.com. If you want to message me, you can find me on Twitter as Jawache, or you can email me at hello@theclimatefix.com. If you want each new episode neatly packaged together with the show notes and sent to your inbox weekly, then subscribe to our newsletter, which you can again find on theclimatefix.com. Till next time.